Today I'm joined by an in-studio guest, Hank Ayala of the Matadors. Good afternoon, Hank.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Thanks for coming down. I appreciate you doing that.
Hey, my pleasure.
So tell me where it is that you grew up, and we want to talk eventually then about your group, the Matadors.
I grew up in a little town by the name of Weslaco, Texas. It's close to Brownsville, south of San Antonio. It's the coastal plain town. Anyway, that's where I was born and raised. I was there for 21 years.
21 years. So yeah. What made up the town? What was the population and who populated it, shall we say?
Well, at the time when I left in 1962, population was about 14,000. Mm-hmm. Basically made up of Hispanics on one side of the tracks and Anglos on the other side of the tracks. Yeah.
Well, so what was it that got you interested in music?
Oh, I don't know. One day I discovered that I had musical ability. I was like in junior high and discovered I had a singing voice. And I got together with some friends of mine and they had, you know, that kind of ability too. And we just kind of like started playing around with it. And one thing led to another. And eventually we ran into this disc jockey in our hometown. His name was Bobby Dixon. Mm-hmm. And he heard us sing at one of the, one of those teen hops. And afterwards he came up and he says, "Hey, would you guys like to play some gigs around town? I can arrange to do that for you. I think you've got a lot of talent." And so that's how we got started.
So now, was that when you were still in junior high, or?
I was a freshman in high school.
So you started singing with that group then as a freshman in high school?
Yes, a freshman in high school.
Well, that had to be a pretty big thrill just to be able to do that.
We used to practice in the boys' room in the high school that we had because the acoustics were so good. But once in a while, we practiced there.
All right, you had the good echo going on.
It was a lot of fun. Of course, we didn't practice there on a regular basis, but every once in a while, the Matadors would be singing there. Everybody knew, oh, that's the Matadors.
Yeah, stay out of the bathroom, huh? Go somewhere else. You eventually made a record, and I'm not gonna go too far ahead, but this next set of music that we have actually involves a few of the players, people like Bobby Doyle, Kenny Rogers.
Right.
Bobby Doyle, then he played on your records?
Yes, he did.
And Kenny Rogers, is there a connection there at all?
Yeah, Kenny Rogers was one of the musicians in the studio when I went to record there. This was in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And he played upright bass at the time.
Right. Did you get a chance to talk with him a lot? Was he just there as a musician, or how did that work out?
Well, he was there as a musician, but we were there a few days in Houston, and we lived about 400 miles from there.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a few days to get ready for the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to know them a little bit. But after the record came out, that's when we got to know them a little bit better. They went down to where we used to live, And we decided to go into Mexico. Mexico wasn't very far from where I used to live. We went to some night spots. Mm-hmm. So we were there. Bobby Doyle and Kenny Rogers were there for about 2 or 3 days. And so we had a lot of fun.
So you guys were all then just playing on the record, playing gigs in the different areas?
Yeah, playing gigs in different areas just for a couple of nights, you know. And this was in, it's called Reynosa, Mexico. It was right across the border from where I lived. Border was only about 5 miles away.
So that did have to be fun, and you've just done the recording, then you get basically some of the same session people out when you do your gigs.
Yeah, they came down to visit because, I don't know, I guess they just took an interest in us, and they wanted to do the kind of music that we were doing. We're doing four freshmen stuff, you know, and four lads, and four aces, that kind of thing. We also sang in Spanish. So we did a lot of gigs in Spanish. The three of us guys that we were in the Matadors, where all of us could speak Spanish fluently.
Well, Kenny Rogers at that point in time had some success with a few things.
Yeah, he did. He was not with the First Edition yet.
Right.
But he did have a group, and I'm sorry to say, I don't remember what that first group was that he sang with.
The first group that I know of that he sang with was a group called the Scholars.
Yes, that's what it was, now that you mention it.
And if I'm not mistaken, there was a song, something about Doggy or something that they did, like 1956, and then they had two or three more releases, and then I think he took off from the group.
Yeah, and then he started another group, and it was it was Bobby Doyle that started it. It was called the Bobby Doyle Trio.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing, they were not doing country western, you know, like that really got Kenny going with that song that he, Lucille.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was. It didn't hit very well with that trio, so it didn't go very far.
It's Brian Lee here on KVMR FM, and I'm with Hank Ayala of the Matadors. And Hank, I don't know if you've heard too many of those songs or not, but
I have some of them, not all. But boy, it brings back memories. That's for sure.
So tell me, who was it that was in the Matadors besides yourself?
It was a couple of guys. There was three of us. Manuel Pena was one. He sang tenor, high tenor. Mm-hmm. And Eddie Ramirez, yeah, he sang like second tenor, and I sang first tenor also. So yeah, there's just three of us. We were all in the same town, came up in the same town and went to high school together. We just grew up together.
So what high school did you go to?
Weslaco High School.
So was there just one in that small town?
There was just one. Ah, okay. Yeah. Not very big.
So when we stopped last, you were talking about meeting the DJ, getting some gigs around town, having a couple of the guys come over from the recording studio. What year of high school, again, was it that you made the record then?
It was in December of 59. Came out in early 1960, either January or February.
So you were freshman, sophomore?
I was a sophomore.
Sophomore in high school then when that came out.
Right.
So you've got this record. First of all, though, going into those studios, those are some nice studios.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that had to be kind of a fun experience just in itself.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun. I remember going there, you know, and they were going to take a picture of me to put it on the jacket. You know, the jacket.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out I had a touch of the flu. So I didn't feel very good. But they had me kind of lay down on this sofa.
Uh-huh.
And he arranged me such, so he took a picture, and it still came out like, I thought it was really, really good.
So it's just you, though?
Yeah, it was just me.
Okay.
Just me on the jacket.
Well, I mean, and we've got to set the record straight here. On the record, it's Hank Ayala.
And the Matadors. Right.
So you're definitely out front.
Yeah.
No doubt about that.
Right.
You told me on the phone the other day about a pretty interesting experience at high school with that on the record. You got to tell us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when it came out, they played the song over the intercom in the high school that I attended. And, of course, to me, that was a real treat.
Yeah,
I wrote the song about this gal that I had a crush on. Her name was Betty Jo, and of course she was in school when the record came out. And as we talked about it, I think one of the reasons they did that was because she was still attending school there. So it was a real special kind of experience because not too many people get to experience that.
No, like,
we were the only ones that did that in that high school. And they wrote us up, you know, in the local paper and all that kind of stuff. And I think we got to, like, number two on the charts, local charts there.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It's probably a record that sort of stayed in the Gulf area, but still, there's a lot of audience there.
Yeah, it went, I remember I got a letter from a kid in New Jersey. He wanted to start a fan club.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm sorry to say that didn't go anywhere. We dropped the ball. We didn't have a manager that, you know, would take care of stuff like that and say, hey, look, let's do this. In fact, we were also invited to go to Schenectady, New York, to do a show there.
Uh-huh.
And it happened that they had a real, I don't know, snowstorm at that time. So they canceled it.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we didn't reschedule.
Yeah.
So, but we came real close.
Yeah. Hank, tell me about some of the different gigs that you did in and around your area, and maybe one of the ones that was the farthest away that you did.
Okay. Well, we did a lot of teen hops. We did a lot of nightclubs. I remember we had a contract going in Pottery Island. That's just off the coast of Texas, Gulf of Mexico there. Boy, that place has really changed since I left that. Oh, it's beautiful. But we had a contract going there in a nightclub. We also, right after the record came out, we were invited to do a show. It was a March of Dimes benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the Coliseum, which was, at the time was the biggest center there for a lot of different events.
Where was that at?
In Houston.
In Houston, okay.
Yeah, in Houston. And gosh, we were just, you know, wet behind the ears kids, you know, and we were in awe of this huge place. We sang the song. We didn't actually sing it. The record was playing, and I can remember when it first started playing, I didn't come in.
Oops.
Yeah. And there was a lot of different artists, you know, that went to that. Jimmy Clanton was one of those. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people remember Jimmy Clanton.
You bet.
So that was a neat treat. We did that.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all over the place, you know, doing local stuff.
Do you ever get out of state at all? Or
no, we never went out of state. Like I say, we almost went to New
York.
You know, to Schenectady, New York, to do a show there, but we didn't. Shortly thereafter, things just didn't work out. We didn't have a manager that could take us further, so we kind of broke up.
Mm-hmm. I see. Did you have any involvement, say, with Freddie Fender at all? Because he was from down in that general area.
Yeah, he lived about, I'd say, about 7 miles from where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to, the Matadors and our manager at the time, he was a DJ, Bobby Dixon. We went to a nightclub where Freddie Fender was doing a gig there, and we met him.
Mm-hmm.
He met us, and he knew of our record. Our record came out, and then afterwards, of course, he went, you know, pretty big. But I didn't know him real personal. I just kind of met him.
So, again, this was late 59s, 1960s.
Yeah, back in the 60s, early in the 60s, 62, 63, something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah, and really a nice guy.
He just, you know, he had some great records. He started off on a label called Falcon Records, and they were actually Spanish records.
Yes, they were. Yeah, I remember the label.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that was based out of either Brownsville or McAllen. I think it was McAllen.
McAllen, that's where it came from.
Yeah. Yeah. And
In fact, I had a cousin who also recorded in Falcon Records.
Hmm.
Female cousin. She was pretty, and she just did Spanish stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he got his start right down there, and then he we're actually going to play a few of his records here coming up. But he had some good local hits, and he was about to make it big, and then had a little problem with some of that funny weed, and that took him out for a little while. But he came back, and he did some good stuff. But he not only was he Freddie Fender, but he was also known by the name of Scotty Wayne. I think one of the reasons was they were trying to get something going once that little incident happened, and the Freddie Fender name wasn't so popular. They recorded him under at least one other name, and tried to get some action.
I knew his actual name, Valdemar Huerta.
Very good. I couldn't have pronounced it nearly as well.
That's what it was.
We played your record as well in that set. It's called Handsome, which was the flip side of Betty Joe. What can you tell me about that?
Well, that song was written by a fellow by the name of Jimmy Duncan. He wrote another song, which was very popular at one time. It was You Are My Special Angel.
Mm-hmm.
You might recall that song, Brian.
Yeah.
And just a bit of trivia, the inspiration for that song came from his daughter, who at the time was like 6 years old.
Hmm.
And when we were rehearsing for our recording session, we rehearsed at his house, Jimmy Duncan's house. And he wrote that song. He wrote several other songs, you know. But this was an interesting song.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were commenting on during the break. It's definitely an interesting song.
I don't know where the inspiration for that one came from, but
obviously you were
fun with it.
You were inspired enough to sing it, though.
Yes, and it was a lot of fun. Hmm. I enjoyed it.
So tell me a little bit too about the group breaking up. What was it that caused that really to happen?
Well, one of the guys, Eddie Ramirez, shortly after the record came out, I don't know, things just changed for him. He decided he wanted to go in the Air Force. So he joined the Air Force, and the other guy, Manuel Pena, decided he wanted to go to college. And
what?
So, yeah. Imagine that. And so that left me kind of like all by myself out there. And I continued, you know, to go to different nightclubs and sing by myself. I had a couple of people that were accompanying me,
mm-hmm.
piano and bass and drum. But I don't know, things just didn't pan out for me, but I wanted to continue.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't work out.
You know, it sounds a lot like the DJ that you had, just didn't quite have the time to really promote you full time. You already had the radio gig and who knows what else at the time.
He had a family, he had children, you know, and so it was hard for him. He could only take us so far.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I think we needed a manager that could say, this is the next step. This is what you need to do.
Yeah.
I think we would have done okay if we had had direction.
I think so.
But we were just teenagers. We were just kids, you know. We didn't know any better.
Right. There was an awful lot of groups, that you could go hear sing, but it really narrows the field down when you say who actually recorded.
When we were getting together initially, you know, when we first started out, we started out with seven guys.
Seven guys?
Yeah.
Wow.
Seven guys. One played a sax, one played a piano, and eventually we just whittled it down to us three.
Huh.
So we booted the other guys out. But there was other groups, you know, around there that were attempting to do what we were doing. And we succeeded. I guess we just got lucky.
Do you remember any of the other local groups?
Gosh, no, I really don't. Mm-hmm. Like I say, you know, they came and went.
Right, right. But
I do remember, you know, going to a lot of different nightclubs because we also played with dance bands. You know, I played trumpet and one of the guys played trombone,
mm-hmm.
and the other guy played guitar. So we were involved in other adventures as
right.
well. So.
Right. You certainly had your hands full. You were a writer on one side of the record.
Right.
And Backbeat being a big label and all, you should have seen some sort of royalties from the writing. And was there any kind of financial arrangements that were made and followed through with your group?
We really it didn't sell as well as we wanted it to, and so we didn't see any royalties to speak of.
Okay, I see.
But yeah.
So no royalties from the record, none from the writing.
It just didn't go nationwide, even though they were playing in other states.
Right.
I talked about that one kid from New Jersey who wanted to start a fan club.
Right.
So it was playing over there. It was playing in New York.
Right. So we know it definitely got out of Texas, which is
right.
something that I was kind of surprised to hear, but actually in a good way.
Yeah.
They probably figured it was a wash with a recording session and such.
That's what I figured it was as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was a wash. And we did record another one. That one, it's been such a long time. I don't remember if it actually came out and didn't go anywhere. Or they shelved it. They didn't put it out. I don't remember. But we did do another one. Gosh, I don't even remember the name of the song that I wrote.
Oh.
Let alone the flip side.
Oh, okay. But
so
that may have stayed in the can then.
It probably stayed in the can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hank, we played the Matadors. We had your song again, Betty Joe. It's one of those songs that when you hear it, you're going to yourself and you're scratching your head saying, now why didn't that get out a little bit farther? And you know, I think you've spoken to it already, but you listen to it and think that.
I know. To this day, I don't know what inspired Jimmy Duncan to write those lyrics to that song. I don't know.
Yeah.
He wrote some good stuff. You know, that song, You Are My Special Angel, that
right.
was a mega hit for him.
Big, big hit.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you know, you can say that, you know, you did get into the studio, you did record a record, and it did sell a few anyway, certainly in your neck of the woods. And as you told the other story back on the East Coast, because you almost had a show there based on the record itself.
That's right.
So you know that some copies got sold. It just didn't make it all the way onto the hot charts.
Yeah, we were very close, but didn't make it.
Yeah, but still.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun doing that.
That's it, and that's probably
yeah.
worth more than anything else.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Hank, it's been a pleasure to have you down here, and thanks for stopping in.
It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed our time here.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. It's always interesting to me to talk with people that have been into groups that didn't make the big charts, didn't sell a billion records, and you know, get their take on things and see it a little bit differently, and I appreciate those views.
Thank you very much for having me, Brian.
Hank Ayala and his group, the Matadors. We've heard both sides of his record, Betty Joe and Handsome. Great stuff, and you're listening to it right here.